I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. It's been hot here in the Philadelphia area, and many have escaped to the record-breaking temperatures by heading to the Jersey Shore or the neighborhood pool to cool off in the water. But how many of us feel comfortable wearing a bathing suit in public because we don't have what we think is the perfect ideal body? Now, most studies show that most people have a negative body image, wishing they were thinner or younger or more toned. Very few of us live up to the airbrushed beauty and body standards we see online or at the movies or on TV. So how do we learn to accept ourselves for how we look and feel confident in our appearance? We have three guests with ideas about how to answer that question. Ann Poirier is author of a book called The Body Joyful, My Journey from Self-Loathing to Self-Acceptance. She's a certified intuitive eating counselor and body image and neutrality coach. Ann Poirier, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Nice to have you with us, and it's great to have you here as well. And with us in our Philadelphia studios is Irisha Pikett. She's a local body positive mental health professional based here in Philadelphia. Irisha Pikett, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
We're happy to have you. And rounding out our trio of guests is Brian Pollack. He's founder and clinical director at Hilltop Behavioral Health. He'll be joining us to discuss the increasing body image anxieties facing boys and men today. He's an adjunct professor at Yeshiva University. Brian Pollack, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm quite happy to be here and excited. Thank you.
Yeah, it should be a very fun and hopefully helpful conversation. Let me just make sure our listeners can be part of our conversation. You can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me begin with kind of a broad-based question, and Anne, I'll start with you, but Irisha and Brian, I want to hear from you as well. Why do most people, Anne, have a troubled relationship with their body?
Well, it really starts by what we see, you know, and that's something that you alluded to. We see perfect bodies everywhere we look, and we have over the years, and that perfect body has evolved and changed through generations, and yet it doesn't show us what a true person looks like. It's airbrushed, it is photoshopped, so it doesn't look the way that most people look. I believe the percentage is maybe 5% of people can actually have the type of body that we see everywhere we look, from grocery stores, you know, to movies, to social media. It surrounds us. We are engulfed in it.
Yeah, these impossible standards. Irisha, what do you say? And let me just add one little thing, because when you look at babies or even young children, they love their bodies.
Yes.
So what happens?
I think at some point we become acceptable to the ways in which people make emphasis on our bodies. We live in a world where your body is kind of like open game to anyone being able to make an assumption, make a critique. I think fat shaming is the most, you know, widely accepted form of discrimination across genders, across racial lines, ageism. Like, everyone fat shames. And it's actually okay. Like, a lot of people will not confront people who actually shame people about their bodies. So I think early on, we just always feel like our bodies are open to that critique from other people.
That we are being judged all the time about how we look and what our bodies look like.
Absolutely.
Brian, let me get you in on the conversation. And what are your thoughts, broadly speaking?
Yeah, I love what both your guests are saying. There is a component where you're right. As babies, we're completely connected to our bodies, somatically connected, embodied even. And there comes a point in our lives, usually around puberty, sometimes a little later for boys and men, where we start to act on our body because we are fearful of social anxiety, social judgments, being shamed, not being perfect, having to be able to be safe in this world. And as we start to act on our bodies, we actually, in a way, disembody ourselves. Mm. And we break off the connection between mind, body, and soul. And we start to build almost another sense of self as we move around in the world.
So we get disconnected from ourselves about who we are. And let me go back to you, and I'm looking at one of the words in the subtitle to your book, self-loathing. And we can't do justice to your whole story there, but just how intense was your, can I say the word, hatred, that you hated your body?
For sure. And it started young, as Brian said. It started a little earlier than puberty for me, right around 11, 12. And just from experiences that we have in school or on the playground or in our homes even, or at the doctor's office, they happen all over the place. And I just internalized feelings of not enoughness, not right. My body was not right. And if I could just change my body, then everything would be okay. So the self-loathing just, it captured me at 11, 12. And then basically, I use the term, it grew roots in my brain of the way that this is who I am. It became my identity. And so this self-loathing stayed with me for a lot of years, decades, unfortunately, in and out of having trouble with trying to figure out how to get the body that would make me acceptable and not, you know, a mirror for shame and judgment in the world and to myself.
And I'm assuming we're talking diets and obsessive and obsessive exercising, those kind to get to this ideal, this perfect body that you had in your mind, imagination.
Yes, everything that I could try, and that's the unfortunate part too, is that's now it's just gone up a $78 billion industry, diet culture and dieting and changing the way we look. We're not good enough the way we are, and so we are not only seeing images, we are also forced to see a lot of time diets, lose 10 pounds in 5 days, or get to a size X in, you know, in a week or whatever, on magazine racks everywhere and in social media as well.
Arisha, you talk about the sort of living in a world of judgments, but I wonder whether this kind of, when we internalize that, whether we end up then shaming ourselves.
Absolutely. Is it Anne? Made a great point about it starts like in our home, in our communities. As a person who works in behavioral mental health, I work with so many adults who told me those first couple of like years, they have been like shame about parts of their body from their caregivers. So if you your foundation is already one based on judgment and critique, it's really hard to recover from that as you become an adult. So I do think we internalize those things of like not being enough. But if the person who I is supposed to be on you to tell you you are enough is actually one of your harsher critics, it's really hard to move away from that as you get older as well.
And I wonder for African Americans and let's say African American women, but we should include men as well, whether there are stereotypes and judgments that make this even tougher, even harder.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely. I hear it in my own community. Like if you are a certain body type, there's these connotations where people think you're lazy or you don't like take care of yourself, and you're moving from the standard of beauty that you have more so internalized. But that's not only like body type, but like racially. I grew up in the South where colorism was a really big thing.
Like,
and so the more darker you were, the more you would deem to be less beautiful, because we looked at whiteness as the standard of beauty, and your hair had to be a certain way as well. So, you know, I think if you have internalized the fact that you are not beautiful based on those standards, I think you spend a lot of time, you spend a lot of money, you spend a lot of like resources on trying to make yourself look more presentable to that standard.
Brian, let me get you back in on the conversation. We've been focusing, you know, largely on women here, but I'm thinking about the kinds of shaming, I guess, men feel as well, or even boys feel as well. How does that present itself?
It starts early. It's for boys especially. Think about the acculturation that happens on the playground, anywhere from, I'd say, kindergarten up through high school. You know, there's an actual push for boys to man up in an early age, and they get policed by other boys. So if you aren't able to fill into a place where you are not, I don't know, strong, or you are unable to perform a certain action that's not seen as good enough within the peer groups, you start to sense that you could end up being not good enough or an outcast. And that's very, very scary for boys. Plus, on top of that, boys, their language is not the same when it comes to female talking. Male to male is very restrictive. It's very much about being in control. It's about being put together, being strong. Eventually, around puberty and a little after, boys start obsessing over having six packs, making sure that they are accepted as internally strong as well as externally strong. And it's kind of one of these funny things, because if you express that you have emotions as a man, as a young man, you could be seen as weak, that you shouldn't share these things. And so the only way many, not all, but many, many boys and men start to look at themselves as a man is in contradictory ways. They end up saying, well, if I don't have muscles or I'm not strong or I'm not lean, I may not be seen as a man. And yet on the other side of the spectrum, if you actually do end up having muscles or a particular leanness or a certain control, you can't have emotions, because you could be seen either as weak, or you can't access them because you haven't built the ability to express yourselves. So what happens is you start acting on yourself. We see so many young men who end up with mental health needs surrounding obsessive compulsive disorder or severe anxiety or major depressive disorder, because they are so locked up in acting on themselves in order to feel safe in the world.
And we're almost having a break here, but this gets to this disconnect that you were talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we see the disconnect in very easy ways, where if you looked at, for example, there's a big study many moons ago about figurines, and they looked at Star Wars figurines from when Star Wars first started to the reoccurrence when they started doing new Star Wars episodes. And the action figures are very different. The old ones look more like people. There's not as much muscle tone. There's just more of an action figure with a lightsaber, where now Han Solo ends up having a six-pack and huge biceps. And these are the toys kids are playing with. So if you think about the generational change that has taken place, it's right in their faces. They're taking that in, and they are internalizing that as well.
Well, we're going to take that break and then get back to our conversation talking about body image. And that's Brian Pollack, also with us, Irisha Pikett and Ann Poirier. And again, you can join us. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We're talking about body image, how to feel good or better about your body, no matter the shape and size. Talking about developing a mindset of body positivity and neutrality, which we will get to in just a moment. Let me just make sure that you know who our guests are. Brian Pollack is founder, clinical director of Hilltop Behavioral Health. Also with us, Ann Poirier, certified intuitive eating counselor, body image and neutrality coach, author of a book called The Body Joyful, and Irisha Pikett. She's a body positive mental health professional based here in Philadelphia. Irisha, you wanted to respond to something that Brian was saying right before the break.
Yes, I was listening to Brian talk about how boys and men internalize being strong. And I was thinking about how so many Black women I've been in conversation with say the same thing. Like, they grew up having to always be strong, always having to, like, carry and hold so much, but not being able to have a wide range of emotions to express themselves. And I think that causes a lot of anxiety and hysteria, because you also have this, they're also told to be soft externally, but also have to withhold so much strength. And I can just imagine, like, being a therapist to a lot of adult Black women who says that causes a lot of anxiety.
Yeah. I mean, one can see all the puzzle pieces, and how do you fit all that stuff together? Yeah. Let me go back to you, Anne, and I do want to talk about what body neutrality is about. I think we know about body positivity, the idea that we should feel good about our bodies, no matter the shape or size. But body neutrality is something different. Help us understand what that means.
Body neutrality is another concept of how we feel in our bodies. And I think about body image on this continuum. So there's this place where, you know, I felt like I was for a long time in this body hatred space. And then on the far side, we have this body love. And when you're not liking your body, which a lot of people don't like their bodies, and you're being told you have to love your body, it is a really far reach, and it almost feels unfathomable to actually say, I'm never going to love my body. That's what goes on in people's heads. And so with myself and with the women I work with, this body neutrality concept is a stepping stone up this continuum, and it's a space where I don't have to buy into loving my body, and I don't have to buy into hating my body either, because hating my body hasn't been helping me. So how can I shift the focus of my body from its outward appearance, which, because this is very, it's difficult, right? But towards the function of my body. This body is what I experience my life in. So how can I see it from a different perspective, where I'm looking at how my body functions and all the wonderful things I am able to do with this body that I have been given.
So what our bodies can do for us rather than what they look like.
Yes. I think that's so important for us to see something different.
Absolutely. Arisha, you're sitting across from me and you're nodding your head. Go ahead.
I am nodding my head because I love the concept, but I also walk with an organization called Girl Trek. They're the largest Black women health and wellness organization in the United States. They have over 1 million women. And so they follow the CDC guideline of walking every day, intentional walking every day for 30 minutes a day to reduce those preventable diseases like hypertension, you know, even like stress. But they really promoted, like, you can do this to anybody that you have, right? They're not promoting, like, they want you to have a thin body or this very athletic body. It's saying walk with the body that you have and be appreciative of the mobility of it to carry you from one place to the next. So I definitely agree with that concept.
Yeah. Let me read a listener tweet. And actually, Brian, I'll give you a chance to respond to that. She says, I'm listening in my wet bathing suit, overweight, 62, having first... just finished my water aerobics class. It took me decades to realize that nobody at the gym is paying attention to me. They are focused on their own journey and activity. I hear some chuckles from our guests here. But, Brian, I'll give you a first chance at that listener tweet, which I think is really helpful. Nobody cares, right? As much as we do about our bodies, right?
This is wonderful. I love that she's saying that. That's exactly what we're trying to do with all of this. When we work with individuals here at Hilltop or Arisha or Anne, I mean, this is very much the first steps, which can feel really risky and really scary. But when you start to find body neutrality, it actually causes you to dig deep and ask questions about how you came to adopt these thoughts that continually nag you over and over again. And are they unrealistic? Are they connected to standards and ideals, whether it's our family or our culture? But even better, what it sounds like she's starting to do, which is fantastic, and go, is it gives that a break from that nagging voice. Because you choose not to listen. You choose not to entertain it anymore. And that is the work. That's where neutrality comes in. It's not about loving, okay, now that I'm free or I'm separating myself, I have to love myself. It's, I can devote time to moving and being or doing what my body can do at this current moment to be okay in the world. And that's important.
Sure. And Arisha, let me go back to you and just talk a bit about social media. And it's funny, I was watching TV recently and there was an ad for Botox. And I noticed that all the actors or models, whatever they were, who were getting Botox were probably in their 30s. I mean, they were not in their 90s, you know, full of wrinkles. They were in their 30s. But I wonder if you could just talk about social media or media and just how pervasive it is.
I believe that social media is one of the biggest influences on the way in which we view ourselves now. Because I see a lot of comparison that happens. And I'm like, that a lot of social media is not real life. Or we think we see, we think we know what we're seeing. We don't know things are very filtered. Or like, sometimes people have surgery to do things, but then they're promoting like, if you do this healthy lifestyle like me, then you will look like me. But I think a lot of the conversations I do have with people is that they think this is what they're supposed to look like, right? They think this is how they're supposed to be living a healthy lifestyle, and it kind of distorts our whole reality around it. Yeah.
Do you want to add to that, Anne? I mean, what's weird is that those airbrush, those people don't look like they're airbrushed pictures of themselves, right?
Right. You know, one of the studies that I just read was that young girls take an average of 14 selfies before they post one. And that's just that tells you just what our social media is doing and our society is doing. We are showing, as some people will say, you know, you see when you're scrolling somebody's highlight reel, whereas you're living in your life. You're not seeing anything, like Aisha said, you're not seeing anything that's going on the other side. All you're seeing is this one picture in one moment of time. And that's where, how can we really take a look at our own social media feeds and say, is this helpful for me? Or does it make me feel bad and start to compare and start to behave or act out, as Brian would say, towards my body because it doesn't look as good as that.
Here's an email from Patty. She says she wants to talk about wearing a bathing suit. She says, I have noticeable scoliosis, and I've had stares and comments that weren't too curious. And perhaps, Arisha, I'll toss this back to you. I mean, this is sort of broadly speaking, but when someone is looking or making, you know, unacceptable comments, how do we handle that?
I say still put it on, right? Because everyone is going to have an inference. Like, whether they say it verbally or whether they say it internally, someone is going to have a comment. And it does hurt. I'm not going to validate her feelings. But you still have to, like, put it on and still have to, like, stay focused and live your life, right? Because everyone is just going to have a comment. And the other Twitter comment that you had reference when the person said, oh, no one's looking at me. Like, nobody's looking at you, but then sometimes people are, because you never have to do things alone, right? So I think representation matters. So her putting on that bathing suit may inspire another plus size person who want to put on that bathing suit too. So
let me read a related comment, and this is actually a tweet from Jay. He says, one thing remains constant. I always hate my body, how my body looks in pictures, and then I see those pictures a year or two later and I say, damn, you looked amazing. How sad you hated your appearance back then every single time. I wonder, Brian, if you could respond to that, which is that, I mean, first of all, do we see ourselves accurately, and the kind of judginess that we have as well? And our bodies do change over time.
Yeah. A lot of times when we're looking at ourselves, it's subjective in nature. We're trying to make it objective where we can say, I look a certain way and I'm going to be okay, or this is how I want to become. And again, as Arisha and Anne had mentioned, with the social media aspect during the pandemic, what ended up being a big problem was it wasn't that social media is the problem. It's the catalyst to this exact experience. And it went into hyperdrive during the pandemic. There's a lot of debate around whether it's the problem or the catalyst. that's a different conversation.
Sure.
But when we're looking at the pictures around how we used to look, we do struggle with the acceptance that bodies change, that we live in our bodies and that we have to eat food, and that if you looked at a growth chart from the medical doctor, it doesn't go straight across for the rest of your life. That chart, that S-curve, actually slightly goes up over the lifespan. And so we are trying to hold on to bodies we had 10, 15, 20 years ago when our bodies are growing and maturing still. And so we struggle with that allowance. And there is a part of this when we look at ourselves in pictures. Are we taking that picture in that moment of, oh my God, I want to hide my body and hide behind someone? Or are we taking the picture because we're genuinely so happy to be there? And sometimes it's that exact experience that changes our view of ourselves in that picture.
Let me toss something to you, Anne, and about I don't mean grief in the really tragic way, but the idea that as Brian was saying, which is our bodies change over time, and that we have to sort of give up on that 20-year-old body that we might have had when we were 20 years old.
Yes, and I do think that there is some grief involved there too. You know, the grief of the old identity, or the grief of the way we walked in the world when we were 20 or 30, as we age into our 40s, 50s, and beyond, the body is always going to change. Our bodies have changed since they were babies. We know that, and they're always going to continue to change. And sometimes we can pause for a moment, take some deep breaths and say, yes, my body is going to change and I can be okay with the changes that happen. These are the things I've learned along my way. This is the wisdom that I've learned in my body along the way. And that, how do we want to take care of and fuel and move and talk to this body that is going to continue to change? Even day after day it changes. And so how do we bring more appreciation and acceptance into our lives as we continue to age?
Irisha, I'd be curious what you say in response to that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we all sort of are so influenced by the diet industry, even if we're not on a diet, if you know what I mean. It sort of infects the decisions that we make about our life.
Absolutely. I agree with Anne. I feel like the models in which I look to, the people who are even older than me who are enjoying their bodies, are also enjoying their lives, right? So they are okay with like where they are at in life. And I think those two influence each other. So these people are curating lots of joy for themselves. They're doing things that like light up their life. And I think because like inwardly they feel good, it spreads to how they feel about themselves outwardly as well.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Let me get Jennifer to join our conversation. Jennifer on line one. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi, everyone.
Hi there.
I am calling. I had an eating disorder for, 15 years until I was about 30. And I ran, I over-exercised, and I was trying to get this body, and it just, that didn't work out. But I am 44 now, and I just realized that my body is not, it's a healthy thing. I'm not worried about how it looks. What I'm mostly worried about, or what I want my body to be, is strong. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to do things. I want to be able to lift things. I want to be able to walk upstairs. I want to be able to, I have a lot of 90-year-old role models at the Y that I really just, every day, they're there, and their bodies are carrying them, and they are just so proud of being 90, and they are so proud of their bodies. And I am sort of, that's my goal now. I don't care about how thin I am, what size I wear. I care about being 90 and being able to do a step aerobic.
There you go, Jennifer. I really appreciate the call. And it sounds like you want to add something. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just, I resonate with that. I had an eating disorder as well. And that, it hangs with you for a long time. And once you can step over that and say, how can I just start to live my own life and look to, I love that she's looking to, you know, the 90-year-olds and how there is a lot of joy in watching people as they age continue to do the things that they love and to, you know, end up stopping some of the things that they love and then turning to find something new that they can do instead. So I just wanted to say yay.
Yay.
Yay, Jennifer.
Yeah, I'm also inspired by the older woman. I go to the YMCA very often.
Yeah.
And I went to spin class this morning at 6. And teacher is 60. There's 63-year-olds in there. And they are, like, kicking butt. And I remember I asked one of them one time. I said, how do you stay motivated? What's your motivation? And she said, I just wanted to retire so I could work out all the time. And I feel like that's my goal. I'm looking to retire so I can spend more time just doing the things that I love.
Oh, that's great. Bren, just a quick question to you. You mentioned, and this is looking at boys and men, that they don't seem to have the kind of vocabulary that, and this is, of course, you know, broadly speaking, that girls and women have about their bodies. How do we help them get those words?
You start to try to understand that emotions come in all types of people, all genders, all non-binary genders, all experiences. And it starts at the home. And a lot of times, kids who get upset, boys who get upset or struggle, it's just because they're expressing themselves. And unfortunately, when we have these contexts of what masculinity or what being a man is, we try to shut it down. And so being man to man, opening up and not fearing emotions. You know, there's four main things men go through that if they can break through that, they will break generational patterns.
Well, you know what, Brian, only because we're up on a break and I want to hear all four. Yeah. Hold on to that thought. And then we're going to take a very short break. That's Brian Pollack, founder and clinical director of Hilltop Behavioral Health. And Poirier is with us as well. She's a certified intuitive eating counselor, wrote a book called The Body Joyful. And Irisha Pikut is with us as well. She's a body positive mental health professional. And we are talking about our bodies, ourselves. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can call 1-888-477-9499.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with our guests about developing a mindset of body positivity, of body neutrality. Brian, you said there are four things that the boys and men need to address. If you could tick them off for us, and then we got a lot of people that want to join our conversation.
Oh, fun. I'll do it quick. The first one would be restrictive emotionality. Learning to not restrict emotionality, right? Understanding vulnerabilities and connecting and helping children and other males through expressiveness and not seeing them as immature and weak. The other one is maybe not pushing for socialized success and control. The need to always be in power and be competitive. Not all boys are competitive. Not all anybody is competitive. There's certain people that maybe, but we have to learn to regulate that, restrain in some way where we can offer creativity and connection. The other part is for more of the adults, conflicts between work and family relations, trying to not get lost in one thing, particularly work too much. It ends up becoming a preoccupation and it causes a major dissonance where men feel like they're living in a world where they have to provide and they get rather fixate on it. The last one is fear of femininity, connection. Oh. How do we actually allow ourselves to put our head on another man's shoulder, to put our arm around somebody, to give them encouragement, to recognize men's struggle and be supportive of that? Those are some of the key moments that will help men start to connect.
No, I think that's super helpful. Let me toss something else out, and I want to put this to both you, Irisha, and to you, Anne, having to do with trauma and the impact that trauma can have on people's bodies, on body image. Irisha, I'm looking at you, but Anne, I want to hear from you as well.
I think trauma is stored in the body. I love the book, The Body Keeps the Score, because it talks about how we carry things that we don't even realize. Those are things that are inherited to us through generations. And I think as we approach adulthood or living through adulthood, we're trying to recover from the things that we have been exposed to early on. So I think as much as we work on our physical self, it really is a whole mental and behavioral change of how you approach your body and being in relationship with your body as well.
Yeah, and you want to add to that?
Yes, well, the emotional piece is such a big part of all of this, because when we feel emotions that we are uncomfortable, we don't like them, we don't want them, we turn to behaviors that might not help us all that much. And so when there is trauma, there's kind of this cycle of continued either self-shame or also beating, judging themselves and then holding themselves accountable same kind of a piece where it's really important for us to continue to work through the emotions around that. But trauma affects the body image tremendously.
Indeed. Let me get Ruthie to join our conversation. And Ruthie, go ahead. You are on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
So this is kind of going back to the comment that you guys were talking about with Botox. I think it's kind of important to include plastic surgery and cosmetic procedures as being both, it can be a positive and neutral thing for people. I got a nose job and now I don't worry about what angle I'm posing at in a photo, and I can just enjoy. And, there are plenty of things, I guess, that I can fret about, and this just doesn't have to be one of them anymore. So there's also kind of a positive spin to that, depending on if it's a psychologically safe thing for people to do.
No, I think that's totally a fair question. And if you don't mind, I'm going to toss that back to you, which is, it's our body, right? We get to decide.
Absolutely. It's our choices. And I think about body positivity and body acceptance and body appreciation and body neutrality. And people get to choose how they want to feel in their bodies. And there's not a right or a wrong way. And so how can I, in my body and in my experience, step into myself and show up as the person that I want to be? And what does that look like for me? So it's also, what's the underlying, why is this a necessary or it feels necessary to do this particular procedure, and being able to know underneath what the why is as well, so that once a procedure is done, then you can still step out and not have the same feelings that you had before, which can be it can happen a lot.
Let me read a couple of comments, and we have actually an interesting question from Kathy. Mary says, I have no problem exposing my middle-aged and untoned triceps to people by wearing sleeveless shirts. Elise says, I think it's time for new bathing suit attire. I haven't bought anything new for swimming since my kids were little, and I'm going to stay on a body of water in September. It is time. Let me just leave that out there, but let me read the comment from Kathy, who says, do tattoos play into the topic of body image? And I'm going to start with you, Arisha, only because in the summer you get to see everybody's got a tattoo. Yeah. I have a tattoo. Yeah. I mean, everyone seems to have a tattoo. How do we fold that into our conversation?
I mean, I have lots of tattoos. I have very political tattoos. And I feel like maybe unconsciously I got a lot of those tattoos, so they could be looked at. But I'm also a person who doesn't mind that their body is on display and people look at it. So maybe I might have a different perspective on it. But someone who maybe does not want their body on display, I could see how they can make them feel a bit self-conscious about it.
Yeah, I mean, Brian, how do you see tattoos and bodies?
I think they're an absolute expression of one's experiences and the meaning. You know, they're important. And they often will help somebody find closure to trauma. It's sometimes an opportunity to be able to mark a change and a transition in someone's life, as long as they want the tattoo, right? So I think that we have to learn that people express their bodies in so many different ways that we have to be able to actually not add to the voice when others might be judging, Or if somebody's feeling self-conscious about their tattoo and they mention that, give them the support, because tattoos can be really wonderful things.
Sure.
I think they're totally a great opportunity to be yourself.
Let me read a comment here. A few listeners are raising concerns that body positivity promotes unhealthy behavior. Being overweight and obese is dangerous for health. Also, now marketers are cashing in on the body positivity movement. And let me toss that first to you, and then I'll go to you, Arisha. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think it's really interesting, but weight, this is where I think there needs to be so much work done. Yeah. Weight does not dictate health. And weight does not dictate mm-hmm. worth. And there are going to be people that are going to always assume that if someone's in a larger body, that they are unhealthy. Or they, like Aisha said earlier about not, they're going to have assumptions of them. And how can we start to retrain, right, and retrain our society in a different way so that we understand and people understand that weight isn't a dictation of our health. And I think that's really important for us to look at.
Yeah, go ahead, Irene.
Yeah, and I was also going to just add that, is it a real concern? Like, are people really concerned about people being unhealthy? Because if that's the case, there, like Ann said, there are a lot of, like, unhealthy people in thinner bodies, and no one ever comments on those things. So I don't think it's a really concern. I think there's some people's angle to discredit the whole body positive movement. But I think if you want to have a different conversation about what is healthy, unhealthy, you know, or whether or not people are actually taking care of themselves, I think we should do that across all body types. Because as Ann said, you can be overweight and still be very healthy as well.
Let me read an email from Jill, and I'll actually put this to you, Brian. Jill says, I'm a small woman. I've been thin shamed my entire life. It is an acceptable form of body shaming because I think people assume you look good to me. You must feel good about the way you look, and they throw all of their insecurities at you. I've been likened to having the figure of a boy, largely by people who are near and dear to me, which cause me body issues. And I'm tossing that to you, Brian. Only just I thought the reference to a boy is sort of interesting in here, but that that you can be thin and feel body shamed.
You can, and in all honesty, it goes to show that nobody knows what the right body is, and everyone is fearful of being judged about their body. And that's the confusion that so many people are going through. How do we own the fact that our body is different biologically than, let's say, somebody in a larger size or in a smaller size or in a neutral size? And it's really tough. As Anne was mentioning, we are starting to see a big change about the attitudes around body size. And one hopes that with this multi-billion dollar marketing world, it starts to shift somehow. But it has to start somewhere in the medical community, starting to create more ideas around health at every size. And as we start to look at, okay, well, I am thin-shamed, well, let's talk about, how are you processing that? Mm-hmm. What is happening? And is it traumatic? Because it can be. Sometimes people going through all kinds of shaming end up not being able to actually process themselves, what they're going through. And Anne, I believe, had used the word body wisdom in an earlier segment. It's so important. Can we drop into our body wisdom and start to listen to ourselves and start to detach from that nagging voice or that social anxiety? And how do we build movement in that body to feel better?
Here's a question from Doug. He says, my back is deformed from a disease. I'm very thin. I'm embarrassed to get into a swimsuit, and I avoid showing my torso because of how strange it looks. What advice do you have for trying to become more accepting of it? And I think that's sort of a broad-based question. Arisha, let me start with you, and then, Anne, I want to hear from you as well.
I always tell people, don't do anything if you feel uncomfortable with it. Just because we're all talking about bathing suits, put bathing suits on, that might not be your comfort level. Mm-hmm. Find where your comfort level is at and start there. It could be, you know, something that's more like two-piece and cover up, but maybe as you start to feel more comfortable in that, you might want to incorporate something else. But just because everyone is saying two pieces are in with show skin, that does not mean that you have to do that as well. Wear what you want to wear and still enjoy, you know, the pool of water.
Sure. Yeah. And anything you want to add to that?
No, I think she's right on. Mm-hmm. Is to try to find something that feels comfortable and hope not to not do the things mm-hmm. that you love or want to do mm-hmm. just because of how others are going to look or assume other things.
Here's an email from Geraldine. I went to a women's clothing store last summer and noticed they had no sleeveless tops. I asked the clerk why. She said, our customers do not want to show their arms. Astonishing that a national chain store knows customers feel that way. Ann, can I toss that back to you?
That drives me crazy.
It's the older arm thing, right? Never wave.
Right. But our arms do so much. Our arms allow us to hug our children and our friends, and our arms carry our groceries in. Our arms do so many things. And how can we turn the focus there as opposed to what they look like? So that's why I just wish we could wear clothes that we're comfortable mm-hmm. in and express ourselves in any way that we want and just be appreciative of these bodies.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is so interesting to be so focused on a one piece of our body, right? A nose,
yeah.
Arms, yeah. Irisha.
Yeah, and I think, too, going back to that, we have agency around things. Like, if that person feels very strongly about it, I would bring it up to the store. Or I would not shop there if I feel very strongly about it. I don't want to be any place that does not embrace who I am in my totality.
Here's a tweet from Dee. I'll give this to you, Brian. Dee says about the quote-unquote summer body. One, put on a swimsuit. Two, go to the beach. I mean, basically, stop obsessing about it and just go enjoy yourself, correct?
Oh, well, if it was only that easy. I love this. I love the simplicity of that. It's kind of like just almost like just jumping out of an airplane. Just go. You're going to be fine. There's a parachute. People will be around you. You're going to be on your own. But for a lot of our people and a lot of the things we're talking about, you know, when it comes to bathing suits for men and women, we have to figure out clothing that makes us feel good about our body. And whatever that is important. So put that on, then go to the beach, be with people that you connect with. It doesn't have to be a million, one, two, and go have fun. I wish it was that easy.
I do too. We have about a minute, and I'm going to toss this to you, but I wonder whether we don't live in a sort of weirdly eating disordered country. We have these impossible standards that we've been talking about, and you go to the supermarkets and we're surrounded by, you know, high sugar, high fat food, advertising that tells us, you know, that we can eat anything, and we're caught in the middle between these two forces.
Yes, for sure. And that's where we get to tune into our bodies. How do foods make my body feel? Do they give me energy? Do they make me want to take a nap? How do they feel in my body? And allowing ourselves to experiment with foods and with clothing and with experiences due to where our comfort level is and how they make us feel. And so it is asking yourself curious, non-judgmental questions about a lot of the beliefs you may have had about who you are or your quote-unquote diet or how you look, and allowing yourself to see yourself in different ways as opposed to the one way that you saw the way your body shows up or food or been told about food.
Well, we have to leave it there. My thanks to all three of you. Ann Poirier, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. Her book is called The Body Joyful. Brian Pollack, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And a pleasure for us as well. Founder and clinical director at Hilltop Behavioral Health, Arisha Pikett, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. She's a body positive mental health professional here in the Philadelphia area. To replay this hour, many more hours of Radio Times, go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under programs. Diana Martinez, our engineer, the show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us. We'll